Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Old School with DP and J on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back, Old School Husker Hall of Famer Jay Foreman. Jay, for the break, listening to Bill Bush on the station, listening to Kenny Wilhite on the station, and several of the conversations in play, listening to Rashawn and Farley talk about, you know, the transfer portal and what it does, and it's multifaceted in its effect and cause and effect.
Right.
Why you're in the transfer portal looking for defenders, what you need specific to your scheme,
right,
and then how long it takes you to become acclimated.
Just depends on the player. I mean, there is a transition period, everybody. You know, I consider myself a pretty good student of the game, even when, you know, I went to Houston, which, you know, so when I got drafted, we ran a 3-4, which was more like, I call it a static 3-4, you know, it is zero technique, 2-5s, and some, you know, we played a little bit of reduced front. And then in my fourth year, Greg Williams came in and we ran a 4-3 front. Same stuff, but a little different.
I want you to go back a second, though. So in describing 2-5s and a lesser front.
Right.
That's specific to the coaches and how they felt about the talent that was in play, right?
Yeah, Buffalo definitely drafted to it, and that's the same thing you have to do. You're essentially drafting players out of the transfer portal or acquiring them or whatever you want
right,
to call
trades,
it.
Right, trades, offseason, that's what it is.
It's the same thing. You're just playing a little bit lower level of NFL monopoly, per se, or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And so the biggest thing, if you're looking at a player, back to myself. So then I got traded to Houston.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to think. So I started out 3 years, was pretty successful in the 4-3. I'll be honest, it took me a little while to really come to, like, and I was there all off season, went through training camp. Like, I didn't really feel like I let loose. You know when I really felt like I let loose? Is when the linebacker coach came up to me and he was like, I was the starter, but then they were like, he was like, hey, you know, they thinking about playing this dude. Then I went out there in like Pittsburgh and just like bump it. And I just destroyed everybody.
Yeah.
And then after that, give a crap factor went out the window. But it
freed you up.
It did.
It freed you up.
But the thing is, the way that Greg Williams and Jerry Gray, or the Tennessee Titans when they had Javon Curse the Freak, the way that they ran coverages slowed me down. Now, and Jerry Gray kept telling me, once you get the basics down to where it's like when you roll out of bed, it will be like the sun shining through the clouds. It took me – I remember when it was. We played out at San Diego. It was like that what next week. Didn't really play particularly well out there, and then – but I learned from there. And then toward that second half, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I get it.
The aha moment where it slows down.
I'm five games into the season, into my contract year. Then I go to Houston. Our 3-4 is a little bit more of the original Blitzburg zone blitz. That's 4-3 fronts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fronts were fine because I just came from a 4-3. But then the coverages actually were probably a little bit more what I did in college because we ran Panther in Steeler week. And so we were running a lot of that because our coaches went there. But then we ran a little bit more of the coverages that we did when I was under Wade Phillips and Ted Cottrell.
It wasn't hard for you to learn this, the theory behind it. You had to learn the verbiage.
The verbiage, the technique, the communication, the checks, when you check, and how you check. And then we had Vic Fangio, who was more along.
I love Vic.
Right. But this is you like Vic now.
Yeah.
So hold on. And Vic was great. No, don't get me wrong. But Vic learned. I'm telling you how Vic became one of the best defensive. He might not say it, but I not tracked it, but I kind of watched it because I knew about him when he was at Indy, when Indy's defenses were struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And then he always was a Dom Capers disciple.
Yep.
And so when he came to Houston, he was a defensive coordinator. And I remember talking to actually Christian Peter and Rob Morris, who was a linebacker from BYU. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me the things he liked and didn't like. Mike Peterson as well, who, you know, I knew each other. He's like, his schemes are great, but it's a lot. He puts in a lot. And that's what he did in Houston. He put in a lot, a lot. There was a time that where when we were, I'll never forget, we were playing Pittsburgh. We had, you know, the zone blitz set one way. If the fullback goes just to the guard, it's one blitz. If he goes to the tackle, it's another. So you're actually calling checks and blitzes as you're blitzing the quarterback. And
different motions.
Different motions, sets. And you got to do all this while taking on Alan Faneca, who's 330 pounds and is trying to destroy you.
Gorilla.
And the realization that it was fine with me. It was actually – I got caught on a hot mic from a ref. Uh-huh. And then, so my dad heard it and stuff like that. He's like, dude, you guys are calling plays as you're running in there. Now, how does that convert to your original question is college football? You have to make sure that the guy – when you're evaluating – this is just my opinion. Mm-hmm. And take it for a grain of salt. When you're looking at Derek Pearson to play – or O'Shawn Mathis to play in a certain position, and this is what's always funny about coaches, you see him doing one thing, and you see him being successful. Then he comes here, and then you're asking him to do something totally different than what he's used to. So now he's learning a new defense. Well, first of all, he's in a new city, mm-hmm. new team, new situation, heightened pressure, new defense, new scheme, checks, and then the
– And Fort Worth and Lincoln are not the same.
And new responsibilities on the field.
They are not the same.
And if you ever see a guy out there kind of looking like he's running and but he's in slow motion and his mind's going faster than his body, and that's what it looked like. And that's the best way. If you could look at guys where we're in a 3-3-5 now, try to get as much tape that you're evaluating them in those type of fronts or potential 3-3-5 looks that you're looking how they move. You know, can he drop? You know, can he rush the passer? You know, standing up. Or is he better with his hand in the ground? And how many years you have it? Because if you have a guy that has 3 years of eligibility left, well, then you know you can be a little bit – you can deal with – give him a little bit and add on to it. But if you have a guy that's 1 year, you got to really just focus in on what he does well so it can pay dividends for you. And, again, like basketball we talked about and football, get the most out of your roster. Trey Palmer, okay? Mickey knew him in and out. He knew him since he was like 12 years old. He knew what he was made of. He knew he was going to take advantage of the opportunity. But what could Trey Palmer do? Take the top off of defense. He can run routes and he can catch it. And he's going to play with some swagger and he's going to be tough. Well, we don't need him to be Wondell. We don't need you back there running, kind of option or running in between tackles. And that's why it paid off, because you saw what he could do. You saw what Marcus Washington can do. And if you want an example of a guy that had his aha moment, it was a little bit later in the season where Marcus Washington became more consistent. You know, he had the case of the drops early because he's probably out there trying to run perfect routes. Am I really supposed to be breaking this off at 8, or do I need to go at 9? And then once he starts to figure out where he's at, then you start saying, oh, when he made the catch down the sideline, you know, one, you know, really big catch, and then, you know, he does other things. You're like, oh, we start to see him more often. Then that's where you see, you know, your return on your investment. So I think the biggest thing with Coach Rule and those guys is it's no different than you're recruiting high school kids. You have to know what you're looking for, and you have to know what you think that you can get out of them based on knowing and understanding what you're looking for. Don't just, you know, it's kind of like me sometimes. If I go to the store and I'm hungry, I don't really need cookies, but I'm going to get them anyways. But then, don't just because you think you need a pass rusher, don't get them if you're not going to use them. You know, because you got to evaluate
especially a guy that needs to be on the field doing what he does well to help you.
Well,
O'Shawn came to put pressure on quarterbacks. That's how he was going to help you. And then you get him here and to not allow him to do the thing.
Well, it's a little bit on both, though, because O'Shawn probably needed to put more effort into learning everything as well. Because at the end of the day, you're just a dime a dozen when you go to the league. When he mm-hmm. walks in that locker room,
he's not
Von Miller. He's not like Bosa, because he hadn't done anything yet. So there's guys that are up there in the league that already they know how to get to the quarterback. So you might have to kick down and play a 5 technique to get on the field in a speed package. If you want a really good example, Justin Tuck, who when I was with the Giants, he was the R4 or R5, and I was the L5. He was running, but you know what? He got a couple plays at defensive end. Then they went to the speed package when they had Strahan, OC, him, and Toflason, you know, 71. And that was their NASCAR package. And then he was rushing inside. But then what did he do? He became so effective inside that when Strahan retired, he went in and then he became a pretty good sack artist on the outside. And now he played well at the Raiders. And then everything was accentuated. So with that being said, you have to know how to do more. But it's also a relationship between the player and coach to do it. And you know, just, you know, at times you saw some good things and, you know, in some stuff in that. But that's also some of the things that you need to make sure that you're articulating. You know, if I was in the transfer portal and I'm O'Shawn, I want to see the whole playbook. I want to watch you see. I want to see someone tell me exactly how I'm going
to
play.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Isn't that one? You can't share information until you have ownership of said players' rights, right? I mean, you're not going to share. You're not going to go through and give a potential player in the transfer portal access to what you do and film study. But you can test the IQ. You can test the awareness.
Yeah, you can do that. But also, I mean, we have his TV here. If we're sitting in here, and you and Austin are the coaches. You know, it's your job to sell. If you want me to, you're trying to get me to come to Nebraska because I got options, right? And I'm sure they did this, but I'm just talking about just we're talking in this room.
Yeah.
And you're saying, okay, Jay, you're a middle linebacker. This is our basic front. This is what we run 60% of the time. We're in nickel defense, 4-2-5. Okay. You're asking me what do I see? Then this is what we see you doing. Okay. You know, our middle linebacker and our base defense plays here. This is where you play in nickel. This is where our Will or Sam plays in base, and this is where you play in nickel. And, okay, this is our cover three. Everybody runs cover three. Everybody runs cover two. Everybody runs cover four. So this is what you talk about that. So I can see it. So, okay, I can see that.
Is that being done in full all the time to your knowledge?
I hope so.
Because in the recruiting process, like it's a dating process. So you don't want to get too deep.
Yeah, I don't think it's done
with somebody, right? Because then it's like, well, why are you pressing? Like, I didn't vibe with this dude.
Right.
Because he was asking me a lot of questions about stuff that, quite frankly, most high school or lower level football players don't not prepared for Nebraska level defensive verbiage and schemes.
No.
So
it's a different type of recruiting process.
Isn't that why coaches are going into the transfer portal rather than getting high school seniors?
In theory, you're going to get guys that have played before. Or that have been essentially you're going it's like a year of prep school.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In reality, you're not, because a lot of these guys that haven't played, they haven't gotten any practice reps. So all you're doing is getting a guy that's been on the college campus a year or 2 years.
He's learned at least how much time it's going to take him to study. He's learned how to maneuver a college campus.
Guys that haven't played. Now, look, when you get a Trey Palmer or somebody like that, you know that he's played a while. You know, like Casey Thompson, you know he's played and essentially started. Now, that's different. Now, you could really get to him and really – because that's Casey. He wants to dive into the details. Now, when you're recruiting, I'm assuming high school kids. The high school kids are getting here, and you probably spend 80% of the time telling them how great they are, because that's all they want to hear.
Isn't that just
that's all they've been told, though.
That's the deep one. That Saban once said that the difference between a Power Five recruit and a Pack of Five recruit is the IQ, in that room. That they're those that are hungry. Right. For information and who have seeked it out, and those who have simply just been good enough and nobody's ever had to work them. And he goes, right. Yeah, no, you headed to South Carolina because I don't have the time for you to have that talent and not the IQ.
Yeah, or the work ethic.
Yeah. So that line is there. I do want to – it came up in conversation earlier, and I need to ask you about it, and we can start the conversation here, and then we'll get into it later. But – what's the the talent level difference. So let's say he's a senior in high school. What is the talent? Let's be specific, and let's say linebacker. What's the talent level difference between a linebacker who is destined for Nebraska Wesleyan versus Nebraska Kearney versus Nebraska Lincoln? What's the talent level difference between like a high school linebacker who projects to Nebraska? Yeah. Is that size, all those boxes? Is it IQ? Is it work ethic? What is it? What's generally the difference between Nebraska Lincoln and Nebraska Kearney?
It's usually size or speed, you know, or perceived speed. Now, granted, you'll see a lot of guys that are really good players in that might be an inch or too short. You know, you can't change that. But they're heck of a football players. I mean, you know, I talked about London Fletcher yesterday. Everybody in America missed on him, including Nebraska, Alabama, and everybody. So everybody just took that L.
Yep.
So that's what it could come down to, or it could be a size thing to where, say, and the thing that hurts some kids in Nebraska, if Nebraska doesn't offer you, then everybody's are lazy recruiters and like, well, if Nebraska ain't offered them, we're not going to offer them. But then as soon as Nebraska offers them, we're going to offer them. So a little bit is on the laziness, but then a little bit of it is, you know, the projection of how bigger, faster, stronger they can get. Some of it's by frame and some of it's by size. And then you look at how he plays and the competition, I guess. I mean, I'm not a big thing to, you know, like, you know, where you're from does kind of can project it, you know. But I think it's also down to the individual, because I remember this. I know Kenny was talking about Zane Flores and Matt Verzal telling him about it. I remember I was doing a speech out in the middle of nowhere in Nebraska and hearing about Drew Ott. And he was an 8-man football player. And he was like it was like Paul Bunyan. Everywhere you went, I mean, obviously they knew I was a former Nebraska player. They were like, you've seen him. This. He was a really good basketball player. I mean, just flat out off the chains in football, 8-man football. But when I was so happened to see him play, I remember leaving 4 or 5 messages down there with Bo Pelini. Like, look, dude, this is one of the best athletes I didn't see, dude. I said, homeboy is put together. He's vicious. He's explosive. Yeah, he plays 8-man, but, I mean, the way he's playing football, it doesn't matter. And the biggest thing on knock on him, he played 8-man. Well, then he was a thorn in Nebraska's side for 2 or 3 years. And unfortunately for him, he blew out his ACL and then, you know, kind of hurt his NFL, you know, career. But, you know, and another thing where, you know, I saw Noah Fant play in the state tournament basketball. And I saw him go get up and down the floor and do things as far as like running pass patterns to get the ball and then dunk on people. And Mike Riley wanted to look at him as a defensive end. I always say, we want you to be a tight end. And he ends up going top 12. So, you know, I think just to kind of, I always say it's in the eye of the beholder. And, you know, you got to be able to look at guys that, you know, fairly and honestly, no matter where they're from. I know growing up, when Jim Wacker came into Minnesota from TCU, you know, oddly enough, he brought in Kevin Sumlin and all those guys as assistant coaches. I don't know who was all on the staff, and they were constantly going down to Texas. That's all they wanted is Texas guys. And now for every Chris Darkins that they had, who ended up being a decent running back at Minnesota, there was 10 other guys that couldn't play dead. Well, what happened was as the college football landscape changed and high school football changed in Minnesota, you start to get better athletes, you start to get bigger. You lost 10 years of recruiting. You know what I mean? So that's the Jay Foremans, the James Laurinaitis's, all the other guys that went on other places and do stuff. You know what I mean? The Walker Lee Ashley Juniors and all these guys that go different places. That's in the foundation of your water, right? Like Frank Ragno, right? The starting center in the NFL. He's from Minnesota, right? So, but his, I think, uncle was in high school when I was and got overlooked. You know what I mean? So these are the type of things that can happen when you're not coming and evaluating local talent. And that's how you get a guy that might go to North Dakota State. Look at, you know, Gobert that plays for Philly.
Mm-hmm.
How do you miss on him? He went to South Dakota State. Minnesota had to miss on him. Nebraska did, and certainly Iowa did, because he's a superior athlete. He's an NFL All-Pro player.
Folks missed on Lance. You missed on right. – like, there's a whole train of quarterbacks that right. skipped I mean, the whole process.
Yeah, Trey Lance is from – I think – is he from Marshall or is he from where the Vikings used to have training camp, right?
Yep, Marshall.
Yeah, he's from Marshall. I mean, that's right literally
– Missed it.
Missed
like,
it. Right there.
Swing and a miss.
Right. So,
like,
I mean, it's just all about where you're projecting what you like and – you know, the guys that continue and really like recruiting and not just say it, generally do a good job. Really do a good job.
I want to – we'll put a pause there. We'll come back. Go a little bit further into it because I've seen in different places where the big universities find a feeder system, local and convenient, that they can work with in a mission to develop the next – level and generation of players. I'll ask you that sitting here in Lincoln, Nebraska, why wouldn't Nebraska partner with Kearney and Omaha and, that was a joke, and Wesleyan to run similar systems to be a feeder system for late bloomers, hard workers, and gamers to get knowledge and move up to the big program? We'll talk about that with Jay Foreman when we come back.
Watch Old School live on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Old School with DP and Jay on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.